And right now it is time to bring in our friends from up north in South County, Massachusetts, and that is the Berkshire Edge, the berkshireedge.com on the web. They join us here on a Wednesday morning, and we talk live about the stories that they're following and covering. Good morning to David, and good morning to Marcy.
Good morning. Good morning. Marcy is on shortly.
Okay.
No, she's here. Good morning.
So, you know, I look at the stories, the list that we go over. And,
good morning.
Good morning, Marcy. Nice to have you. And I want to take it out of order because
That's fine.
Because one of the stories that really interests me, and I read it and I read it and I read it, so I could understand it, and that is when the Black Lives Movement happened in Great Barrington, and really one of the biggest crowds locally. I mean, there've been nice crowds of 100 to 200 in a lot of the small towns, but literally there were thousands of people in Great Barrington. And once again, a comment that was made kind of ruined the situation, where it pitted members of the Jewish community against members of the Black community.
Yes, we're talking about a huge. It was a gathering, you might say, in front of Town Hall in Great Barrington, and it was. Addressed, you know, people came out to honor the Black community and also to mourn, as it were, the shootings in Minnesota. And one of the people that addressed this gathering was Dennis Powell, who's representative of the NAACP in Berkshire County. And unfortunately, he made some remarks that offended the Jewish community by assigning the blame for the death of George Floyd at the under the knee of a Minnesota policeman. As a result of the Jewish community, because the community, the policeman had been trained, or it's not exactly clear whether this training, they had this kind of training, but they were trained by Israeli military.
Yeah, so, the Israeli Defense Forces, and it's funny because the reason that story interests me, my trainer, and I haven't seen Avi in a while because of the COVID-19, but he was a former member of the Israeli Defense Force, and that's what caught my eye on this story. And a lot of police departments do additional training in this country. People don't realize it, and they do training with paramilitary people. And yes, some of them with the Israeli Defense Force. And I was just trying to see in the comments as how it could be misconstrued. And I understand when you get in front of 1,000 or 2,000 people and you speak, people don't always know what goes on. So it was an unfortunate thing that happened to not ruin, but still damage slightly a significant event in Great Barrington.
Yeah, it was really too bad. Yeah, go ahead, Marcy.
No, I was going to say that too. I mean, it was too bad. I mean, there's been a lot of information passed back and forth about what this means about Israeli training, and you know, as far as I can tell from the literature I've seen, you know, the Israeli Defense Force is available to train police around the country in terrorism control. Or issues of terrorism, you know, but you know what he made it sound like is that they are training, you know, local police to kill local blacks, and that it's the Israelis' fault, and it's the fault of the Jewish organizations that provide grants to police departments to hire Israeli training. So, but, you know, the police departments, I think, are responsible for their own standards, and so it was unfortunate. I don't think that he meant it the way it came out.
No, but
I'm not so sure.
Well, maybe he did.
Maybe he did.
I think that there was the underlying assumption was that the abuse the Israelis are said by some people the abusive way that they treat Palestinians, Israelis, is the same way that American police abuse blacks. That was the comparison or the simile that he was trying to make.
Yeah, and it was the wrong place to make that comparison. It just wasn't the right place to make that comparison. You want to talk about that in a section in a separate maybe conference where you have people talking about how police forces are trained in this country and who they bring in to train them. Because believe you me, there's a lot worse people that are training our police in this country than the Israeli Defense Force. You can look it up. I mean, there's some very, very independent former paramilitary from this country that are training police officers in tactics that are really not good
for community policing.
So that was just a wrong place to bring it up. There's a place to bring up how police forces are trained, but not at that rally. Yeah.
Well, I thought it was interesting, however, because from just an objective point of view, it was it was obviously something that was of great, commonly understood opinion and viewpoint of his community, that Dennis Powell's, at least he felt comfortable mentioning this,
Yeah, it's just, like I said, you can feel comfortable mentioning it, but right idea at the wrong time because it came.
I don't know if it's a right idea or not.
Well, it is because you have to look at the way police forces are trained in this country, but not when you've got a rally that's basically honoring someone who was killed by an abusive police officer and how black
murdered,
people in this, and how black people really are once again just getting the bad deal in this country. So it was just the wrong place to bring something like that up. But it is something I think that people are in this country are going to have to talk about sooner or later when they talk about
policing, when they talk about tactics, they're going to have to learn what some of the training, shall we say, issue is.
But that was I wanted to go out of order because I think that's one of the major stories, and I think you're one of the few places that covered that story. There haven't been many other places that have covered that story extensively and brought that out.
Well, we published, his remarks, the little speech that he gave. And we had a video as well of the event that people can watch and hear see not only his remarks, but remarks of other people as well. And we had actually one of the people that did speak was Lee Davis, who's a select board member at in Great Barrington. But her father was president of the Martin Luther King Foundation in Washington, D.C., and was a great civil rights leader. So it was a shame that Powell took this particular stance when in fact we had other speakers who were more measured.
And he took it very early on in the program. I mean, he was like the first speaker. I arrived a few minutes late and he was speaking when I arrived. And then, Lee Davis and a representative of the LGBTQ community.
And there were several young people too.
Right. But he was first and, and he set a tone of sort of, it was kind of a divisive tone.
Yeah.
I mean, because the Jewish community has been very, disproportionately represented in the civil rights movement. And then I'm sure they were disproportionately represented in the crowd in Great Barrington. And also, a lot of those people there were young kids who are very impressionable, and it leaves a bad impression. or you know, it raises an issue that was not appropriate for that time.
All right. Another story, though. The first one that you gave, I said, it's interesting. The story about a resident of Great Barrington who was flouting, almost like people who flout the guidelines to prevent the COVID-19 pandemic, flouting guidelines for environmental protection. And this is a particularly horrifying story because one person bulldozing a wetland in Great Barrington doesn't sound all that bad, but it's terrible. I mean, it is just someone who doesn't believe in social laws.
Yeah, and you know, every so often we have one of these cases every few years. Someone comes along who just really just will not abide by, you know, our conservation, you know, laws. And this was a guy who who bought a property and thought he could just bulldoze a wetlands without any permission, and he knew. He was a repeat offender, so he knew what he was doing. It's not like it was an accident.
Well, that's why I talked about the story, because that's exactly right. It was premeditated. He knew what he was going to do.
Yep. Right.
Something like that leaves me speechless. That's all I can say.
Well, we've had cases like that over the number of years. We had one out on one of the lovely ponds in Great Barrington, and someone was had bulldozed down all the trees around this pond that was the water source for not only Great Barrington but the little hamlet of Housatonic.
Well, you know, that happened in Salisbury a couple of years ago, where somebody bought a beautiful piece of property on Lakeville Lake, and you couldn't see what they were doing, but they, to get a better view of the lake, they took down, without asking permission, and they really were ignorant of this, but they should have known they had to ask, they took down a whole row of trees alongside the lake.
And where? Along
Lakeville Lake. Once they're gone, you can say I'm sorry, but they're gone. I mean,
right.
That's, you know, that's the whole thing about something like that.
And whether or not you don't know, you should know.
I mean,
you should be aware enough.
Yeah, those trees, you know, those roots keep the shore from eroding.
For example,
one of the reasons that this is so egregious in this case that we're current case. Is that river supplies part of a source of water for the Great Barrington, and so you know it. The reasons that these conservation restrictions are there is to protect the water supply, and so it's particularly damaging to the town, but. You know, there are people who just don't feel like they have to abide by that. They, once they buy a piece of property, they can do whatever they want with it. And in Massachusetts, that isn't true.
And believe you me, it's not true.
A lot of places in this country that's not true.
It might be true in South Dakota or North Dakota or Montana, but it's not true here.
And there's every chance that it isn't true there.
Yeah.
We'll move from that to the next generation of Berkshire farmers and food security.
Oh yeah. Well, this is a very nice story because. I mean, I love the way the author opened the story. You know, she said that one of these Berkshire farmers was plowing his land when someone who is apparently a second homeowner, who's usually only there on weekends, pulled up at his fence and asked him what he was doing. And
I just love to drive tractors.
And he said, you know, the farmers as... we have a lot of city people who are usually only here on the weekend, and they don't realize that we actually farm here.
Yeah, that's right.
and provide milk for them. They go to the grocery store.
But listen, I have to say that before I lived here full time, I lived next door to somebody who has a field that gets plowed by you know, I mean, I think he rents it out to local farmers. I don't think he's plowing it himself. But I remember I was having a dinner party one Saturday night, and all of a sudden, the you know, somebody starts plowing the field, and we could hardly talk. And so I wrote them a note saying, couldn't you plow some other time besides Saturday night? And they wrote me back, the wife wrote me back a very nice note reminding me that farmers plow, you know, farmers work when they can. That, you know, they're very dependent on the weather, and we're very lucky to have all these farmers here in the Berkshires, and we need to be more understanding that, you know, if they find a dry patch when they can plow, they have to do it then. They can't wait until your dinner party is over. And so I thought, you know, she was absolutely right, and I felt very embarrassed.
Well, it's a, learning
I'm
process.
I'm sympathetic to this, you know, this neighbor. But the story is really not about that. I mean,
no.
The story is about these two young men who are taking over their family farms and, you know,
right.
and constitute a new generation of farmers in the Berkshires, and that the fact that we have farmers means that Berkshires, at least, for, you know, for dairy, are protected from food insecurity.
Right.
Yeah.
That, you know, the one thing that we have in abundance here is dairy products. And that, as this author says, 17 of the state's 117 dairy farms are in Berkshire County.
Yeah.
So it's a big percentage of, you know, we're well represented. And the farmers are spending a lot of money to maintain their farms. And younger generations are coming in to farm, which is, you know, which is terrific. So these are two young men whose family, who never thought that they would take over their family farms, who, you know, had, who left and went and did other things, but then they found themselves yearning for the Berkshires and came back, and are, you know, are introducing modern methods like milking, you know, automatic milking machines, and you know, other modern methods to make sure that farming can survive.
It's the same way here in Litchfield County, and of course,
yeah,
dairy
sure.
farms adjacent eastern New York. A lot of farms around here turned into horse farms, but dairy farms seem to have they've dropped off in numbers, but they're still very abundant in our area. The next story is about the Boston Symphony, and they have announced a 2020 festival, but like most things this year, it's virtual.
Yes, right.
Right. The yes, it is virtual. In fact, life has become virtual. yeah, are we really live or are we on somebody's screen?
No, really.
We're alive. Yeah. But yeah,
we are.
Yes, we are.
Are you sure?
Absolutely positive.
You wouldn't know, you know.
That is so wrong.
Anyway, I mean, you know, one of the things that the Berkshires, or that Tanglewood is doing, is that they are going to be running, you know, some of the concerts at the time that they would originally have run them if they had been live, like Sunday afternoons, and they're you know, they are featuring some of their, you know, great performers, like
Yo-Yo
Ma and Joshua Bell and Emmanuel Axe, you know, the regulars who are, but they'll be doing encore and archival performances as well.
Well, people can stay at home, invite people over, have wine and cheese on their lawn, open up the doors, and on a big screen TV, stream the concert, and celebrate Tanglewood that way.
And it can be absolutely
lovely. Yes, so I hope people do.
Well. Yeah, but I hope they don't get used to this.
No. When it comes to live music or art or anything like that, yeah, it's nice to hear it on the radio. It's nice to see it on TV and HD and everything. But there is nothing like getting the feeling of being there for a live performance.
I know.
Absolutely.
No, there is nothing. And there's nothing like sharing it with a crowd of people who, who applaud and laugh at the right moments.
You not only hear the music, you feel the music, and you feel the audience
the vibration
around you.
Of it, the dynamic.
The people around you, you feel the energy of the crowd as well.
Right, that's right.
Well, we should mention that the Tanglewood grounds, which are really beautiful, will be open for visitors, limited hours, on Wednesdays, Saturdays, and Sundays. And you have to register in advance. But you can't, and you have to wear a mask. But you can, tour the grounds just to see, I guess just to pretend that you're that you're going to be picnicking before.
You can bring your TV.
That's right.
Set it up on the lawn.
Oh, gosh.
And feel that you're there.
Bring your smart, you can figure out a way to power it. Bring your iPad and start it
off. Yeah, right. That's true. You can bring your iPad, right?
All right. We've only got about 2.5 minutes left.
Okay.
And I want to get to the story about one of your writers, a mother and a teacher, wrote a piece about the life of a parent at home with kids.
Yeah.
Sheila Clary, yes. Yeah, she's a parent and a writer, a really good writer.
And very clever.
A very, very clever woman. And she wrote this story about how she was managing with her kids at home and keeping them occupied, and it was very amusing, and we recommend that story. She's quite something, she's also a teacher at the Montessori school, so she knows what she's talking about. In addition to being a great writer, she's also a teacher.
Well, I think parents are finally learning what my parents knew and parents before that knew back in the old days, is that it's very hard to teach a child and to keep their attention focused.
It sure is.
Yep.
Whilst trying to work virtually.
Yeah.
Well, I think, we are getting...
school's out.
We're getting an appreciation for what other people do that we never, when we have to do it ourselves. I know a friend of mine was telling me about her book club, which is meeting virtually, and she said there's a very wealthy woman in her book club who suddenly said one day, she said, "I'm cleaning my own house for the first time in my life," and I. And I never realized how hard it was. And I'm going to give my cleaning lady a raise.
There you go.
So, and I think nobody appreciated teachers either.
Well, because teachers are now more than teachers. Teachers have always been more than teachers. They've been social workers. They've been comforters.
They've also been other eyes on a situation that is not always leave it to Beaver.
And so now they can be fully appreciated by people that have gone through this and families that have gone through this. That it's much more than teaching. You're also a big part of their growing up in social America and the world, so they have a lot more responsibilities than just reading,
well,
writing,
see, by the way, Sheila calls this the stuck at home handbook.
Okay. Well, with the
installment 5.
Well, with the stuck at home handbook, we'll have to wrap up because we're out of time.
Oh no! Okay.
But the Berkshire Edge has plenty of stories. TheBerkshireEdge.com, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Even more than 24 hours.
Right.
All right, guys. We will speak to you next week.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Take care.
Bye.
Take care, you guys.
Yep, you
bye.
Too.
Bye.
That is this week, The Berkshire Edge on air on Robinhood Radio, and once again, you'll find them at TheBerkshireEdge.com.